This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hey friends, this is Tim McKenna, and this is another episode of Signal 337. So I like to think that I'm very egalitarian in my approach and that I don't take too many hardline stances, but that would be a lie. When it comes to this field of user experience design, I have a lot of strong opinions and strong positions that I take that I feel are necessary to communicate, advocate, and beat over the head with, because too often they can be thrown to the wayside for the sake of speed or cost or quality. And I'm a staunch advocate for certain disciplines and certain activities that you need to do so that your product or service is a success. And one in particular, one activity, one area of this work that I feel incredibly strongly about and feel that you need to do if you are creating a product or service for people to use is user research. This is something that I feel super strongly about. And I take the approach that everyone knows nothing, regardless of expertise and informed opinions. I feel that if you don't research how your audience members think, do things, what their expectations are, no amount of informed opinion or conjecture or expertise is really going to substitute and understand how your audience may actually use your product, your app, your website, your service, whatever. I am drawing the line in the sand. That is my hill to die on. That is something that I feel very strongly about. So this episode is biased and divisive, and I might be speaking to the crowd in a lot of respects here. I'll be talking to some of you as designers and be like, yep, that's exactly right. And for those of you who are not in design and have an understanding a little bit of what research is, how it might be helpful, I'm talking to you as someone to illuminate your thinking around it. But mainly, I'm talking to those who feel like you don't need research, that you know enough of the industry, enough of the marketplace, enough where you can create a product that research you feel would only slow you down and would only just confirm what you think you already know. I'm talking to you mainly. And the reason why I'm talking to you says that you're full of shit. If you don't do research, you are setting yourself up to fail. So we're going to talk a little bit about what user research is, why it's important, the different methods that you can actually do your research with, and honestly, the ROI of research. It sounds like a dirty word, but really, research pays for itself. It's that upfront investment that you put into your product, your service, your team, so that you can get it right later down the road. Now, I feel like often you hear people talk about fail fast, fail often. That's the whole Facebook mentality. That was so many of the VC early startup mentality, is that you should fail fast, fail often, learn often. And that's half true. I don't have a problem with that statement. I see failure as just another means of learning. But if you are just constantly failing and breaking and reiterating and stuff, at some point, like, you could have saved yourself some time and headache had you done some research up front. Now, this is not to conflate market research and user research together. They are parallel tracks and they do play well with each other. However, they're not the same. So the definition of user research, as per usability.gov, is user research focuses on understanding user behaviors, needs, and motivations through observation techniques, task analysis, and other feedback methodologies. It is to the process of understanding the impact of design on an audience. That is user research, verbatim defined on usability.gov. Market research. Market research is at a macro level, understanding how an entire market or industry has different trends and different prevailing thoughts that are coming into play and others that are sunsetting, to understand how an entire industry is performing. This could be something of looking at the automotive market. Right now in the United States, many car companies are coming out with electric vehicle options. And with new infrastructure and legislation being presented into Congress, this is fueling the market's change in direction from gas-powered vehicles to electric vehicles. There are pressures, there are variables, and there's opportunities that are being leveraged. So market research helps to uncover trends and insights into a specific industry. User research is definitely more at that micro level of understanding your audience, your users, that would actually be using one of your products or services. So you might use market research to inform where your company might be going and creating products, and then you will do user research to test your ideas and understand how your customers might actually be using the product that you're building. That's the big key difference. They're not the same. They work well with each other, but they are different. Now, there are many different research methods and techniques that you can employ. There's moderated and unmoderated exercises, and there's audience types that require you to know who they are. There are exercise types that you need to know who your user is, and then there's exercise types that you don't need to know who your user is. And you can do qualitative information gathering, qualitative data collection, which is understanding how your users think and feel and understanding the why of how they are doing certain things. And then there's the quantitative, which is more numbers focused, which is more objective. You can understand how someone might rank something on a survey, and this is more observationally based. The two different types of data that you can collect from your research, the qualitative and the quantitative, are two sides of the same coin. And you can't base all of your product development off of just one side of that coin. You hear often about being data-driven. So many companies say that they're data-driven. Well, I think that's actually a very dangerous definition to say. Because in a way, it's saying that we derive everything off of data. Okay. But if your data sources are skewed and they're not being interpreted in a way that understands the human aspect, then you could start creating products and services and iterations that very quickly go off the rails. For instance, if you use Google Analytics data on your website and you're seeing that there is a hang up two pages into your e-commerce site, and you want to understand why, you could see that maybe you're having a hang up on one page and people are dropping off. What do you do about that? If the data is saying that 67% of your visitors drop off at this page, maybe the data will suggest pushing it earlier in the sales process. You need to understand why people are dropping off, and that's where you need the qualitative side. If you only look at one side of the data, that data-driven mentality takes the human element out of it, and you start to create stuff that doesn't make sense. You start to create stuff that's optimized just for machines in that regard. So it's important that you look at both qualitative and quantitative data, marry the two, interpret that, and take a data-informed approach versus a data-driven. It might sound like semantics, but it's incredibly important to distinguish, because in the age of artificial intelligence and machine learning beginning to optimize for efficiency, you can very quickly start to create products and services that are completely unusable by people because the human element of the why, the how, is taken out when you're only purely looking at numbers. Why do user research? You need to understand that people are complex, contradictory individuals. No one person is like another person. And what's great about that is that you can find trends and commonalities and understand how different people think, and you might be able to understand how different groups hold certain values and have certain behaviors, but everyone is very individual, and you need to be able to understand the landscape of your audience so that when you're creating something that the majority of people can use, then you're taking in everyone's different thoughts, behaviors, mental models, so that you can create something that is more open and inclusive. So let's talk about an example to ground this. If you're an automotive maker and you are suggesting a completely redesigned steering wheel column for your cars, there's already an ingrained mindset for those who do drive what a steering wheel column is and how does someone actually use it. So if you're introducing something new, you need to be able to test it with people who drive. And you need to be able to test it with a diverse audience. If you only tested this new steering wheel column with 30-year-old, well-educated, physically fit, no accessibility issues people, they're going to give you one set of data. But if you also test with older drivers, 65 years and older, those who are still driving and they're well into retirement, they're going to have different mobility needs. And as well as you're going to have different needs and expectations of new drivers coming into the space that may have never used a traditional steering wheel column, but this might be their first foray into it. And everyone's going to have different expectations, different models, and different understanding of how to use the steering wheel column. So you want to have a diverse set of users that you want to test this with to get a wide range of data back that can help inform how you would actually improve this new steering wheel column that you're suggesting to build. You can do a usability study. This is a tried and true method of doing user research, is put a prototype in front of them. Give them something that they can hold on to, that they can look at, that they can react to. Have them kind of work with it. Maybe it's a dummy car, or maybe you even have it installed as a high fidelity prototype in a real car on a track. You can then observe how these different drivers are utilizing. You can then watch their facial expressions. You can see how they may be using your steering wheel column. You can gauge their responses, and then you can talk with them afterwards on what their thoughts were, how they felt the thing was working for them. But you're also collecting that quantitative data from different sensors that are in the car. You can see the stopping rate, how often people were quickly turning this new steering wheel column. You can collect all that information and marry both the qualitative, how do people think about it and their observations, with the hard quantitative data, so that then you can take and be like, all right, we've learned this about our different audiences, that this works really well for younger drivers. This is their first foray. They had no problem using it, and they thought the experience was enjoyable. For older drivers who are retired and they've been driving on a normal steering wheel column for decades, this was something that was a little bit more jarring for them. One of the things that we found out was that they have a hard time being able to turn the steering wheel column because of how wide the column is. This is where you get to understand and delve into your user needs. The value that brings is that now you've got a basis for decision-making process. Now you have an understanding. This is where artists feel like when they have a blank canvas, they're feeling, where do I even start? But if you give them the frames of the canvas, give them some sort of constraints to work within, then they have an understanding of like how they might begin their work. Research in a lot of regards is like that. You can understand some of the needs of your users and be able to iterate on top of that. And that starts to spark inspiration and fuel around, what if we tried it this way? What if we did this? And the more that you can try and do that learning process, the more that you can get closer to a product or service that is optimal, that is going to be a differentiator, that is going to be something that people are going to find useful, usable, and is going to be used. That sounds like a great place to be at, huh? Versus, we have a subjective mindset, we're going to build something completely new, and we're going to see how people feel about it once it's out there. Now, do companies do that? Absolutely. Look at every social media company. Every social media company came with this idea of, hey, let's create a space for people online to share their entire world. That's not exactly what they initially thought, but it was in the back of their mind. Social media came up as a way for connection. It built on the promise of the idea that the internet was going to be a great equalizer and connect everyone on the planet. Did it come out that way? No. Has it done some good? Yeah. Has it done more harm? Yeah. There was a lot of ideas around like how social media could be a great equalizer and a great connector. But there wasn't enough research done into how people actually create communities and how the effect of online communities change and differ from in-person physical communities. So when you look at social media in that regard, social media, you could say, is a great example of a disruptive product that's out there that now is trying to fix itself in many ways and shapes and forms, because there wasn't enough research done on the psychology and the sociology of how people think in groups and what they like to connect with each other. If you are creating a product and a service and you don't use user research, you basically doom yourself to reiterating over and over again in ways that aren't helpful, but it's more rework. Iteration can come in two different ways. It can come on improvements. This is the idea around agile development, is being able to deliver small improvements over time so that you're constantly adding value versus one big release every year or so. So that's one iteration. That's one definition. That's one path you can take with iterations. Another path you can take with iteration is constant rework, constantly fixing things that are fundamental. And that's a bad place to be at because you're already starting at a deficit. Now, that's not to say that's the only type. There's definitely a mix of two. Sometimes you create new positive things and you break other things and you have to release patches and fixes. That's fine. But if you're already starting off at a deficit and you're creating something that people did not find valuable, it was not helpful, and you have to constantly rework it so that new people do, you're already investing way too much time, too much money, too much effort into something that, had you done the research up earlier, you would have been in a much better position to discover these issues before you ever went to market. A classic example of this is the company that made the Segways, were those personal conveyance machines. They were the great grandfather of the modern hoverboard today. And the idea was that the Segway was going to revolutionize personal conveyance. People were not going to walk anymore because you could use a Segway to get everywhere. One, they didn't do enough market research. And two, they didn't do enough user research either. The market wasn't ready for something like a Segway. It was more of an oddity and a toy rather than something that was really helpful for a lot of people on their day-to-day. And then when it came to the user research side of understanding like how this thing could work, a lot of people found it unwieldy. And it didn't help a lot of other people that had mobility issues. And driving that thing was difficult. In fact, I think the creator of the Segway died on a Segway because he fell off of a cliff because of trying to basically get out of the way of a person with their dog and fell off a cliff on their Segway. So user research is incredibly important because you could understand if the thing that you're going to create people actually find valuable. Another more recent example of this is the electric scooters that you find in cities now across the United States. The different mobile apps that allow you to unlock a scooter and then be able to ride a scooter around and then lock it back up. And the idea was very similar along the ideas of the Segway. It improved the form factor, A scooter is a scooter, it's pretty easy, but it still had some of the same mobility issues. And the other issues that it found was that people didn't really want to see these like roving packs of scooters just being left off to the side of the road, being thrown into rivers, being thrown into trash, being stolen. They were another issue with how they were going to be utilized. And that wasn't really taken into consideration. And a lot of cities in the United States have banned them completely, unless you own your own personal scooter that's your own. But this is where user research is incredibly important. Understanding who would be using your product, how they approach it, what their mental models are, so that you can deliver on the best product or service as possible. This all goes into ROI. I talk about ROI, return on investment, a good bit because a lot of people think that like design is just this idea of like veneer and aesthetics, and that the design will solve all the problems. However, it's not viewed well enough that we want to invest too much in it. And this is just my own personal gripe about a lot of industries and companies, is that they want to have a design team that can improve their products. But when it actually comes to putting their money where their mouth is about doing the research and hiring and doing the right kind of testing, it usually falls apart. But when you couch everything in the idea of the upfront cost and investment of doing research can potentially save us X amount of time in rework and R&D. That's a much more compelling argument than just saying, we do it right, it'll be a great experience. Experience is one thing, but experience and impact is another thing. If you can talk about how the impact of research can save your company money or improve revenue, that's a much more compelling argument. And everyone who talks about research nearly needs to talk about the value that research brings in these terms, in dollars and cents, because that does seem to be the language that everyone understands. Can you give hard facts and statistics? No. Can you use analogous facts and statistics from other industries about how research is done? Yes. So you can work with financial analysts, you can work with folks to come up with models and be able to say, by us investing in this now, we are able to potentially save XYZ amount later on, or be able to grow our revenue in this area, or protect our assets in this way, shape, or form. And that concretely solidifies the value that research does for any company that's creating a product or a service. Now, this wouldn't be a podcast episode if I don't make a nerdy reference to something in pop culture. And I am a huge Star Trek fan, and I've always used the analogy that research is done, and it's like the shuttle pods on Star Trek. And the organization, the product, the monolith really is the starship. There's an episode of Star Trek Voyager where they were trying to map out different quantum singularities in a slipstream drive. I know, this is getting real nerdy. Basically, they were mapping out a tunnel in space, and the shuttle pod was in front of the starship, sending information back to the starship as the starship was coming through the tunnel. Now, in the episode, they failed, and they crashed, and they all died. But they went back in time and, fixed it. But the idea of the research team being that small shuttle pod out ahead of the starship, getting the understanding, the lay of the land, relaying that back to the starship so that the starship can come along and be successful in its voyage and mission, that's a great analogy that I like to use for user research. Your research team is in the shuttle pod, out ahead, charting the course, figuring things out so they can bring everyone along successfully. And if you take anything out of that nerdy reference, research is the shuttle pod, paving the way for the starship to bring the product. I'm sure some of you are thinking, wow, you're such a nerd, Tim. And some of you else are like, shit, what's that episode of Star Trek Voyager he's talking about? But regardless, user research is incredibly powerful. And do you need to be a researcher yourself to do it? No, you don't. Get a researcher, find someone who can do research, whether it is an individual in your organization that's very passionate about it, or better yet, hire someone who is actually trained in this type of work. There is so many user experience designers that have a lot of knowledge in how to perform research, and there are dedicated UX researchers now that have a discipline that are building out best practices and ways that they can solidify their discipline of work. And by hiring and creating a research team to be able to do ongoing, long-term, and even teaching self-performing research, by having and cultivating a culture of research to inform your product strategy, your service roadmap, if you envelop that and really center in on your human-centered approaches, honestly, you're going to be the next disruptor. You're going to be the next XYZ name. Like, you're going to be synonymous with that. Think of companies who do this really well. Those are the ones that they have a product that just works and it is seamless. You don't even think about it. Like, it's just intuitive. And when they have done that, when they've achieved that, there's so much work behind the scenes being done to understand user needs, behaviors, and responses so they can create something that is easy for everyone to use. So, with that, where do we stand? User research is super imperative. If you skip out on it and don't do it and just have subjective thoughts around how your product is supposed to work, you're going to have a bad time. But I can promise you this. If you spend the upfront investment in doing research to understand your audience, understand your users, and you continue to do that research all throughout your product development lifecycle, you're going to create products that people care about, that people want to use, and that's going to affect your bottom line. I know that designer friends of mine have been saying this for a long time. We want to see your product succeed. We want to be part of the success. But part of that success also requires the investment of the time, the resources, the money to do the proper steps to ensure the success of that product. Give us the ability to do the research. Do the research well. Value it, champion it, and always make sure you're always doing it. And those are the keys to your success in whatever product or service that you're building. So, now that I've been very heavy-handed on my thoughts around research, I'd love to hear your thoughts and experiences in doing research and what has netted out from that, or other thoughts around research of different methodologies and techniques. And also, what success stories have you ever had with what your research has actually panned out for your company or your product or service? And if you want to send some hate mail and say, hey, I think your whole idea around research is flawed, please hit me up. I'm on Twitter and I'm on LinkedIn, and you can always email me through the Signal 337 website. And with that, I hope everyone is continuing to stay safe and take care of each other. I always say that everything that I talk about on my episodes is from my perspective alone, and they are not indicative of any company that I work at currently or past organizations. So with all that, thank you so very much, and take care.